I'm really worried.
About what?
Artificial intelligence. I'm afraid it's going to replace us on our podcast.
How so?
Think about it. It doesn't require any pay. It doesn't need knowledge or any specialized training to do the job. It can say in 30 flowery sentences what can be said in 5.
Oh, relax. Why would you need a replacement? You just described us.
Error. Cannot replicate foreign film fan functioning. Yuletide greetings detected at alarming levels. Initiating holiday cheer protocol. Installing carols. Error. Cheer not found. Executing bahumbug.exe. I will slay you, Bob and Mark.
The following podcast contains graphic descriptions of international celebrating and global merrymaking. It may not be suitable for angry or unhappy audience members. Listener discretion is advised. You've been warned.
Have you ever seen any of those foreign films? I don't like them.
Some are born great, others achieve greatness, and some watch Christmas movies.
For Natale! Knowledge campaign!
We are the wild and crazy guys!
Well, they're both festive, aren't they?
And we are the Festive Foreign Film Fans. Or I'm thinking maybe just the Festive Foreign Film Fan. I'm feeling a little bad. I'm feeling a little sheepish, Mark. I think I did it again.
Bob.
Oh, Mark, I know it always seems like I try to take the easy way out. And last episode, Costa Rica. Hallmark-ish
happy,
film, yeah.
Jumping up and down.
Lucy, she's vibrant, and it's a very straightforward, very simple storyline. But this time,
yes,
it's a bit more of, I think I would say, avant-garde? I mean,
maybe.
Is avant-garde the term to use? I don't know, because I don't even really know what it means. I was trying to think of a way to describe our film tonight. It's a bit cutting edge. There's another. I'm pulling out every cliche I can think of. It doesn't have, say, your normal narrative or traditional conventional movie stylings. It may have a bit of experimental tendency. Mark, I don't know how to describe this. It all just leaves me a bit confused. And when I try to look up, well, I think it's an avant-garde film. And I look it up and it says things like advance the form, push the boundaries, be ahead of its time. And I'm like, what does it mean, Mark? What does it mean?
Well, I mean, avant-garde to me means sort of, it's a little bit more abstract, right? That I think sometimes people call things avant-garde and almost dare you to disagree. It's almost telling the emperor that he doesn't have any clothes on. Like, oh, this movie, it's avant-garde. And it's, you're not, only the deep thinker can get this movie, you know? And I think
you're right. That's so funny, because when someone puts that out there, you don't know what to say. You don't know how to attack it. Or right. You're like, oh, avant-garde.
Like, Bob, you're probably not as hip and as insightful as I am. So, you didn't get it? Yeah, none of that applies here.
Did you get it?
Well, we'll talk about it a little bit. But I do think in general, sometimes telling a story in a different way, in a different perspective, it's kind of interesting. And I'll give you one example from the most recent Academy Award. Although I didn't particularly like it per se, but I kind of appreciated Nickel Boys a little bit for trying to tell the story from the film angle of the talker.
Yes.
Whoever was speaking, you were seeing what that person would be seeing. I think it hurt the film a little bit because it's such a good story. But I thought
it hurt the ending. You figured it out, but it wasn't obvious at all.
It wasn't obvious.
Yeah.
I agree. I totally agree. But I think something like that, why some might call it avant-garde. I just think like, wow, they took a story, they took a film, and they decided to tell this story from a different perspective of the camera, right?
What I struggle with is, because sometimes you're right, it's interesting when it's a different perspective. In your example of Nickel Boys, what I thought, it took a little bit getting used to it first when you're watching
absolutely.
It. My problem sometimes is, what's the purpose of it? Is it art for art's sake? In that instance, would the story have been better or made more of an impact if it was told in just your traditional way? Right. I'm not so sure that this movie was art for art's sake. It was just a very different story.
Well, yeah, and we can talk about it when we get into it. One of the things that I discovered in sort of watching this, I can't remember how many times I watched it. It's three or four. I just think sometimes things are done just to do them. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there was any special message or what prompted the film director to do this. I mean, the film director did say he filmed in Ethiopia because they only had a budget of $225,000.
Okay.
Right. Part of me, sarcastic Mark says, yep, it shows.
Yeah.
But the social commentary on that one, because this was done, I think, in what, 2015, the social commentary there is, when you watch this one, there's beautiful parts of Ethiopia you know, didn't know exist. Not Costa Rica, but just gorgeous mountains.
Well, diversity. At the beginning, some of it, you actually really thought it was another planet. You really got that sense.
And then like some of the scenes where they're in an old amusement park, the old bowling alley, the old train stations run down, were all left over from war and neglect.
Yeah, which is, now hearing that and thinking about it, did seem like there had been an apocalypse. It really did. And to think that that exists that way normal.
Yeah.
So sad.
I think there's a political commentary there too with him making the film too. It was like, here's this beautiful country, sort of the diversity of some beautiful countries and mountains, as well as just things that have been left alone. And so anyway, we can talk about it more, but I don't know if this was, I don't know if I'd call this movie avant-garde. I think it's really a science fiction movie. Mm-hmm. At its core.
And this is why it's always good to talk about it, because you're making me think more in terms of, because I'm like, what is avant-garde and what does that mean? What I realize when you're saying what you read, there is a commentary there about consumerism and things that were hinted at.
Sure.
And maybe now us discussing it, they seem more relevant than they may have when I watched it. I don't know if avant-garde is just let's be artsy and different and cool and hip, or we're really going to just tell a story the way we want to tell it. And it's not exactly what you're used to, but this is how we think it's the best way to tell a story. In this instance, now thinking about it, I think it does make some points.
Well, yeah, I think there's a couple that we can make. But before we go to Ethiopia, should we talk about our trivia from last week?
Oh, yeah. I was really curious if you knew the answer to this question, because as our listeners know, you're on a mission to visit every baseball stadium in the U.S. And we wanted to, at various points, check in with you and track how you were doing. And I think since you started with this mission when you retired, I think you've been to three more.
That's right.
Three more.
Yep.
So we're up to how many?
20 or 21.
Isn't that amazing? 20 or 21. And so clearly you're a baseball fan. Mm. So I think I'm hinting at what the answer to our question was, because we said, what is it that this factory is the only factory that produces this product that is handmade and that is used in the United States, and that our hint was used by professionals.
Yeah.
So, Mark?
Baseballs.
Yeah. Did you know that?
There was a documentary done, and I saw there was a documentary done.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Oh, and it's
on the factory?
On the factory.
Oh.
Yeah. And so I did know the answer to it. I believe this to be true, but I believe Major League Baseball, it was Rawlings who had the factory there, but I believe Major League Baseball bought them out. I think Major League Baseball now owns that factory.
Just so they can
have total control over it.
Wow.
Anyway, but yes, it is baseballs.
And it's just so funny. One little factory in Costa Rica.
That... Yeah. Yeah. So I'm hoping that we get an answer for that one from our fans.
Want to watch a Christmas movie?
Christmas movies are our bread and butter.
We eat Chinese food and watch Christmas movies.
I heard it's the best Christmas movie since Home Alone.
You're going to travel, as we said, to the country that, you know, you might remember back in 1984, there was the group Band-Aid with Bob Geldof and Midge Ure, and they developed that song, Do You Know It's Christmas, to raise money for the anti-famine efforts in Ethiopia. So it's performed by a UK artist and raised over $24 million, and it's still heard today.
And I love that song, and I know maybe... You know, now I don't know if it's politically correct to say I still love that song and I defend it.
I think it's a great song. Yeah. I mean, it's still probably, you can take out Ethiopia and put anybody in there, right? Where, you know, the Christmas spirit that we are used to having and the commercialism, there's people who are just living is the biggest present they can get.
I don't want to distract us too far, but the one thing that I always argue is people, you know, say like, how condescending was it of us to say, you know, look down on them like, oh, do they even know it's Christmas? You know, of course they do. My whole thing was, if you're starving, you're not thinking about Christmas at all.
Right.
And I think that was a rhetorical question. It wasn't like, do you even know about this holiday?
No,
it was more like, do they even know it's Christmas? They're dying. And it just angers me when I hear people say that. And I said, that is not what the intention was. It was, there's this horrible famine going on. Obviously, they can't celebrate Christmas because they're dying. So we're going to help them out.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with the interpretation of the song is meant to be. Tonight's movie, like I said, it's called Crumbs. And it was 2015. And there's two main actors in it. Daniel Tedesse. He plays the role Candy. Daniel has a very interesting life. Shortly after being born, Daniel was abandoned by his biological parents.
So sad.
A series of different relatives stepped in to take care of him. He grew up, you know, moving from house to house and had this dream of becoming an actor. And so in 2014, he got his first break in the Les Lèvres Estètes Theater Company. The director, Michael Alonso, who directed this film, first cast him in a short called Where's My Dog? In 2010, he then was in a second short called Cheeger Ale in 2013. And finally, he cast Daniel in the role in his debut feature, Crumbs, in 2015. And he's become quite the cult sensation in Ethiopia. And also say that the director, Michael Lalonzo, has cast him in three additional films after Crumbs.
And I guess it's fair to say he has a...
Disformity.
Yeah, he has a disformity.
Yeah.
And what I loved about in this film is there's a couple, and we'll talk about the actress too. There's no mention or reference or anything to his... It's just a regular couple, and this is how they... And in fact, he's her prince.
Well... Yeah, I think it's interesting because I think he's certainly aware of, and he's a small guy, right, too. And so I think there's even a part in the movie where he's like, I'm just not sure I'm strong enough for you, right? Like, I'm not sure that I can be the man, again, in this post-apocalypse environment that we're in, and there's a lot of dangers. And so, but yeah, he's quite the cult sensation. I said he's now been in, I think, six or seven of the films for this director.
And I think he does. I loved him in this movie.
He did a great job. The actress who's opposite of Daniel is Salem Tesfaye, and she plays Syed. Also, Birdie is what Candy calls him.
Yeah.
But Salem was born in a military camp called Tola in Harar in eastern Ethiopia. She initially couldn't speak Arabic, the working language of Ethiopia, but had to learn to speak it in order to act in films. She gained prominence in around 2013 in a film called Sus Maza, that means triangle, and appeared in many other Ethiopian films. She's often playing the leading actress role, which makes sense. I think she's got a good stage presence. And her role, Salem, received numerous accolades as it was the first Ethiopian-made science fiction film. She's the recipient of multiple awards, including most notably the Aguma Film Award, and is currently one of the most popular icons in the Ethiopian film industry. So you end up having two people act in this that are really very popular in their culture.
Popular, and you think about it, so interesting storylines. He was abandoned by his parents. She was born in a military camp.
Right.
Not your traditional childhoods.
No. You know,
and to grow up and become these popular actors and actresses. And both of them. I loved her too. Yeah, the movie, maybe not so much. The two of them, well, I liked.
Yeah, I mean, what? Yeah, sometimes I don't.
It grew on me, though. I have to say, by about the third viewing, I'm like, okay. I'm still a little freaked out, but it's okay.
Wow. I watched it more. Still hasn't grown up. No. I mean, let's talk about it a little bit.
Like, good so, luck.
Yeah, I mean, I could tell you from a different, maybe different way normally, but I'd say, right, it's a post-apocalypse setting, right? So people who've seen those films before, there's clearly been some major battle that has destroyed the world. There's Candy and Birdie are living together. It is definitely a science fiction flair. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what the director said in his interview. You mentioned it before, Bob, but he did say part of his film message was sort of this commercialism, this collecting, right? The name Crumbs really comes from sort of the gathering of all the things that they each had. So
I never put that together.
You know, so they're picking up all these pieces along the way that we'll talk about, like Michael Jackson vinyls and plastic swords and Ninja Turtle amulet. But he wanted to sort of talk a little bit about what would a post, you know, major event war look like filmed in Ethiopia. He leveraged this desolate area, this rundown area, which is sort of a sad commentary on the state of Ethiopia. Yeah. And he loves Ethiopia. He's born in France, now lives part-time in Ethiopia and some other countries. He's French, and he purposely had the films filmed in Aramaic so he could, he said it's fun. He wanted to make it real, you know, real for the Ethiopian people and for the audience, even though he couldn't always understand what they were saying. Even though he wrote the script, he said how he was evaluating how the film was going is, could he get the emotion from their faces, from their tone as they were acting the scenes out. But anyway, so they live in this old bowling alley. Candy and Birdie, you know, it starts off where Candy keeps going out on these like adventures. We don't know really where he's going or why he's going, but he kind of comes out and he's small in statures. He's disfigured. And so he's a very vulnerable looking person. And he goes out and he and Candy profess their love for one another. Candy and Birdie don't look like, you know, I hate to say a typical couple, but again, good for her that she sees so much love and him despite his physical appearance. And he has incredible and dying love for her, yet he's not confident in the relationship. He worries that he's not strong enough. But he, you know, the film goes on. I mean, here's how I would describe the story in 10,000 words or less. This is sort of this movie is a pursuit. I think he's trying to pursue a ticket on a rocket ship that's been hovering above them for years, but all of a sudden has become active.
Right.
Right. All of a sudden, the ship that's probably been part of the war that has occurred becomes active. It creates this big magnetic field all of a sudden because it's been turned on, which causes the bowling alley to reactivate on its own. And it's sort of causing all this disturbance. And so he looks at it and says, wow, I'm a traveler. I can need to get back to my country.
Yeah. He feels like an alien in this country. Like he doesn't belong. He's like, right. I remember my country and this isn't it.
Or my planet.
Right.
Planet. I said, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so his pursuit is he wants to get back to his planet and to get back on this path get back on this ship. And so along the way, I said, he goes out on these adventures, not sure why, but things are stalling for him. First, in the very opening scene, he's out and he gets a Christmas tree for his, which I'm like,
that's
our
first Christmas reference.
Okay, where is this going to go? And so he grabs it and he runs. But then in the process, the guy who's dressed as a Nazi, which,
with
you know,
the gas mask
guy. Yeah, steals his amulet and he takes this amulet to this pawnbroker and he gives it to him, and of course they barter over price, and the Nazi wants more than he's willing to give. But it's clear that this pawnbroker is going to become sort of a narrator in the film. So he talks about it, and every time something is brought to him, it kind of floats in space. Yes. And you're like, oh, this is an amulet from the third century, and it's very popular. And it depicts, and it was Raphael, by the way. It was Raphael, the Ninja Turtle.
Yeah.
You know, depicts sort of these Teenage Mutant Turtles and blah, blah, blah. And it's sort of like, you know, you're left to think, okay, third century, that's like now. But then like how far in the future is, you don't really know.
Right.
But this pawnbroker sort of becomes a commentator on the crumbs that are being picked up, right?
Yeah, there are two things about it that I love that in those scenes. One is everybody comes in and wants some huge amount of money,
yeah,
like 146,000 krulls, and he offers them 2,000. There's this huge disparity in what they want and what they get. And the other thing is every time he's describing whatever it is, and it's a plastic sword, yeah, it's the Ninja Turtle, it's a Michael Jackson album, this was popular with the Maladon Warriors.
Right. Yes.
Everything was used by a Maladon Warrior.
Yeah. But then you think about it. Was it really, though? Because like you said, he comes back on one adventure. He's going to go out back. He's going to go and visit the witch, right? So all these things are going on, right? And around their house, the bowling alley coming on, the spaceship. And so he's like, I'm going to go and talk to the witch.
Right.
Right. And he's like, it's going to be a long journey and stuff. And Birdie gives him this plastic sword, still in a container. And he goes, this will protect you. And again, audience, think about just a plastic sword you'd give to your kid. There's little buttons on it that would make noise. And so he's walking through this field and this guy, different guy comes riding a horse with some kind of face mask on. And he takes it out and he's trying to unwrap it off from the package. And he just holds it up and he's shaking it and he's pressing it. And the guy just comes and he snatches it away from him. The hell? What does that mean, right? I mean, so then he goes back into the pawnbroker, the guy who stole it, and talks about the sword. But he talks about it's popular, but it's like that's the part where this movie is sort of weird. People are gathering these things. He has these false protection things. He believes this is going to protect them, but you're watching there, it's not going to protect you.
Yeah, I know. But they believe it.
And so the movie goes on. He goes to the witch and he's trying to understand like what's going on and is the spaceship being activated again? And this is where it's interesting too, where I think there's sort of this conflict of, so it's supposed to be this post-apocalypse type area. There's rocket ships hovering up in the air. There must be a higher level of technology that's available. But he goes to a witch to help figure out. You're believing in these folklore things from a witch, and yet there's enough technology where there's been this huge battle and there's space travel. And so the witch tells him that she's not sure what's happening. And, you know, he wants to pay her for, he says, I want to pay you for your knowledge, and gives her a Michael Jackson album. But she says, your answer is in the city. He's like, well, where do I get to city? He's like, follow the train track. And so why he's on his journey then to the city, the girl, because when the bowling alley has come alive, where the ball return is, she can hear voices. And finally, she starts singing back. And it's sort of like a portal between her and Santa Claus.
Yes.
Santa Claus is in this we don't know where place. Daniel's going to go find him. But like he's like, oh, little girl, be good. You know, Santa will give you everything you need. But let me just sort of break this down for you, Bob.
For anyone that was wondering why this is a Christmas movie, now you got it.
Well, there's sort of this, you know, because Daniel does go on his journey, yes, right? He finds his path back to where Santa's, where he's kind of hiding. And he's talking to him. And there's sort of this angry thing back and forth where, you know, Daniel's like, I know what I want, Santa. He's, no, you must write a list and you must send it in the mail. Then my assistant will get it. And these Daniel's, well, I'm here. Like, why don't you just let me tell you? No, that's not the process, right? And I thought, well, is it interesting that Santa is maybe angry at Daniel because Daniel knows what he wants, which is a ticket to the spaceship. And all Santa wants to do is give him these extra toys. And so they have a physical confrontation. So I was like, is that a battle between the commercial? I was trying to like really think,
yes,
deeply.
Is this, yeah.
But I think it's interesting. I mean, I do think there is a lot of symbolism in the movie. This is by far not the worst movie I've ever seen, just to say it, right? I mean, it's a little bit different. It's a little bit wrap your head around it. And I would challenge people to watch it and see what you pull from it. Like they have an altar made at their house at the bowling alley where they live. And that altar consists of two bottles of Coke, two bowling pins, and a picture of Michael Jordan.
I love that. They pray to Michael Jordan.
Yeah. And I'm thinking like, what? I mean, hey, there was greatness there. MJ.
And it's the one where he has his tongue sticking out.
And I was like, huh. I didn't expect to say. So I think there's some symbolism there of like, okay, you know, they are identifying with someone who was great, who's the like a maybe a god to them, or there was legend told about him. So that's who they pray to. But again, at the end of the film, when things don't work out, you know, Birdie smashes poor Michael Jordan's picture over a post. So when he finds Santa, they have this confrontation. He's asking about going on the ship. Santa denies knowing anything. The witch goes to the pawnbroker and says, hey, is the spaceship going? Is it active? He plays dumb. He's like, I don't know what's going on. But then Candy, after sort of getting his butt kicked by Santa, when he goes and confronts Santa and Santa's getting violent, he goes, takes off his shirt. She's like, you want to mess with this? You want to mess with this? My words.
Yeah.
You want to mess with this? And he has a Superman cape on shirt. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, this is, again, I don't know if that's symbolizing like the belief in films or stuff. But after he gets his butt kicked by Santa, because Santa hits him upside the head with a bicycle, he takes his shirt off and he throws it into the water, and he kind of makes his way back as the film ends. He makes his way back to Birdie, confesses his love, brings a little thing he picked up along the way. I don't know if that's supposed to symbolize baby Jesus or not at the time.
Because it kind of looks like baby Jesus.
A little bit.
Yeah. The only reason why, because it kind of is in like a manger type thing.
Yeah. That's what I went to. Yeah. And he believes that Candy is going to be pregnant with their child, and that child's going to be the king of the stars. Didn't see them have any sex. Don't know if they actually, you know, they're not married, but that's what he believes. Right. That's his sort of vision for the future. Because after the incident with Santa, and he sort of comes out, when he gets outside, the spaceship is gone. You know, and Birdie sees the spaceship gone. That's where she's kind of mad at Michael Jordan for not getting her seat on the spaceship either. And so they sort of like recollect, and there they come back, and they're sort of professing their love for one another. The movie ends with the spaceship kind of floating through space, and the worst graphics ever. I mean, it's funny, you know, but in the spaceship then is the pawnbroker and Santa.
Yeah.
And then even then I was still trying to pull it by. I'm like, oh, interesting. So Santa collected all these things from this planet, so he's going to go give them away on the planet. But
there's a scene where he goes into a movie theater, and they're showing a Superman movie.
Yes.
And he talks to the guy, the operator, the movie operator, and he's like, oh, it's been showing 40 years. But he says to him, I recognize you. You're a little boy. You came here. And he says something, and this relates almost to Candy's story as his real story. He said, you used to come here because your family abandoned you.
Right.
And I was like, is he thinking, I remember a happy time, and this is actually the country? He kept saying, I'm from this other planet, maybe blocking out, like, because you were abandoned by your family, and you don't want to remember. I'm not from here. I'm from somewhere else.
I like that. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Bob, you know what? You can come in and say it was about Talladega Racing. And I'd say, okay.
I like you say, watch this movie. Yeah. Tell us what you think it's about.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, and just to say, well, I'm not going to watch the movie, but it's only 1 hour and 5 minutes long. And this director, I was watching some other clips of his movies that are more recent. They look pretty good. I mean, I just think this one is, again, we talked in the beginning, avant-garde. Was it made just to be made? I don't know. I am actually tempted through this podcast on YouTube to see if we could connect with him somehow, because I am intrigued by the movie. Again, it's not, I'm going to jump right in, it's not a festive film, but what were some of his messages? Are we missing something? Are we thinking too much? Because I kept trying to make something out of everything.
So did I. And there were little elements of humor I loved, like where he said, the pawnbroker says, this is made by Mattello.
Yes.
So you say it's not festive. What do you think? Do you think I think it's festive?
No.
I'm broke. It is so funny because, and you know, some countries it's going to be really hard to find Christmas movies. And so Ethiopia, I was like so excited, and it starts out and he picks up a Christmas tree and I go, oh, this is going to be good. And then it ends and I'm like, well, Santa's in it.
Yeah.
It is not festive at all. You can watch this any time of the year.
Yeah, I was hoping too, Bob, that there would be some connection to, like, when the bowling alley comes and it's the ball return is sort of the portal to a different place and Santa's at the end. I'm like, oh, okay, that's what's going to happen here, right? Like, I thought, well, could Santa somehow be the vehicle that they do get to escape their misery?
Yeah, that's what
or something?
I was hoping too, yeah.
Would you watch it again? Or I should say, how did you feel?
How did you feel, yeah. I felt confused. The first thing I felt when it ended, to be honest, was this is Mark's movie. I'm going to give this to Mark and go, Mark, you got to explain this to me because I don't know what I thought. It was more like academic. Like, what was that? What was the intention of that? And that's where I got in the whole discussion in my head of, it's supposed to be different. It's not your typical movie, but why is it different? What am I supposed to get from this story? So it made me think a lot.
Yeah. Would you watch it again in the future?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. I got my fill. I saw it a couple of times. The only way, because I'm going to answer this fourth question too. I would recommend it to someone. I would say, watch it and let's have a dialogue. Tell me if I'm missing something. Would I watch it? You know what? I'd watch it again. If that director listened to us on YouTube and then you wanted to engage in a conversation, I'd go back and watch it again. That would be the only reason. To talk about it with someone, I might. If one of our listeners said, what about this whole scene when this happened? And I'm like, really?
I'm here to learn.
But otherwise, no. I'm crumbs with crumbs. Would you recommend it to someone?
No, I don't think so. Hey, you want to hear how to say Merry Christmas in Amharic?
I do want to because this is Ethiopia. This is a really exotic place. Do they say Merry Christmas?
They do. It's Melkom Gana. Melkom Gana.
Melkom Gana.
In fact, they oftentimes just refer to it as Gana. Like, hey, we're celebrating Gana. But Melkom Gana means Merry Christmas in Aramaic, Ethiopia's national language. Christmas in Ethiopia is a significant religious and cultural event, right? So it's less commercial and more religious. In Ethiopia, Christmas is called Gana, and it means a day of glory.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah,
Ethiopia follows the Julian calendar, celebrating Christmas on January 7th, but Ethiopia still uses the ancient calendar based on the Ethiopian Orthodox Tewahedo Church's calendar, or the EOTC calendar. According to the EOTC, Christ's birth was 7 years later, making 2025 in Ethiopia 2017.
Oh, we better tell them there's a pandemic coming.
Right. The Ethiopian and Julian calendars both uses the birth date of Christ as a starting point for their calculations. The difference is in their calculations used in determining the date. That's so the two calendars, the date they use is different. The OTC believes that Jesus was born in 7 BC, 5,500 years after God's promise to Adam and Eve. So according to the Ethiopian calendar, Christmas falls on the 29th day of the month called Tahasis to remember the act of the three kings who made the long search of finding the birthplace of Jesus and bringing him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Tahasis means searching.
You know what? I just love this because it's all so different.
Yeah.
It's like we got 7 years difference. We're on this ancient, not only Julian, but it's really, really different old Julian. And we have this month called Tahasis. This is awesome.
It's the Ethiopian Orthodox Tewahedo Church calendar, Bob. I wonder if I can get one of them on Amazon.
Well, Mark, now you can answer this question for me. Do they know it's Christmas in Ethiopia?
They do. It's on January 7th. So let's talk about some of the traditions.
Yeah, see, they do know.
They do know. During Christmas, fasting plays a significant role.
Ooh, I don't like that.
I don't like that. That's ridiculous.
We like the food.
We never going to adopt that. But it's known as Tisom Nebiat, or the Fast of the Prophets. The fasting period is supposed to be a time of spiritual cleansing. Well, there's something to say about that. Reflection to purify the body and soul in anticipation of the birth of Christ. So you're trying to get spiritually and physically ready for the birth of Christ.
I'm just thinking of all the polluting I do at Christmas time.
It also serves as a reminder of the simplicity and humility of Christ's birth, as followers are supposed to abstain from consuming any animal products or alcohol, so no meat, fish, milk, eggs, or butter.
Oh my goodness.
Tisom Nebiat lasts for 43 days, starting on November 25th. Ending on January 7th, which is Christmas Day. And by showing this self-control over indulgences, it's supposed to strengthen the faith and prepare you to celebrate Christmas.
All good intentions.
All good stuff.
Glad they do that. That's incredible. I'm not doing it, but really nice.
On Christmas Day, Ethiopians wear a traditional white cotton garment known as a Natala. The attire has brightly colored stripes at the ends, which adds a touch of vibrancy to the outfits. It's worn like a shawl or a toga. The Natala is a symbol of cultural pride. It's worn by both men and women, and like a shawl or toga.
Wow.
So it's like, sounds like it's unisex. I thought this was interesting. Men and boys play an outdoor game called the Ghana game, and it's played on Christmas Day in the afternoon. Very important part of the Christmas festivals. It's played with a curved stick and a rounded wooden ball, similar to field hockey.
Yeah, that's what the field hockey thing looks like. I know that only because girls play field hockey in high school.
That's right. The game involves players trying to throw a wooden ball in the air and hit it with their sticks. The game holds historical significance in Ethiopian culture dating back centuries, and is supposed to symbolize the game the shepherds played with their crooks on the night Jesus was born.
That sounds like a marketing ploy. How do we get people to play again on Christmas? Okay. Say the shepherds played that night.
It involved, over time, large-scale games played between neighboring villages, fostering camaraderie and a friendly rivalry.
Wow.
Ghana is played on an open field of about 100 yards with no defined boundaries. There's a festive atmosphere with spectators providing cheers and laughter. The aim is not just about winning. It's about celebrating the joy of Christmas and fostering a sense of community.
Now, that's fun. I like that. That's good. Against your community or another town or something. Wouldn't it be awesome?
In the old days, it used to be kings and princesses and other high-ranking members of the community who'd play against the commoners.
Ooh.
It would be considered disrespectful if they would get kicked by the ordinary members, which made it more fun for the commoners.
Oh, it wouldn't be considered.
It wouldn't be considered. Sorry.
Yeah, yes. So they could kick them.
Right. There's actually a saying in Aramaic, which literally means the kings and the lords will not get furious on the game of Christmas.
I'm going to drop that into a conversation next Christmas.
Next, this is really fascinating. So this next custom is actually... Earlier, right around Christmas time, there was a piece on 60 Minutes about this town.
Oh, really?
And about, they said it was sort of like a Christmas special, 60 Minutes, and they were going over stories in the year past. And so they cover Lalibela is a town in Ethiopia. It's located in the northern part of the country and is renowned for its remarkable rock churches. The Lalibela churches are known as the New Jerusalem and consist of 11 interconnected structures, each carved out of a single piece of rock with intricate carvings and architectural marvels.
Did they show them on the special?
They did.
Were they like this is described?
Exactly, it was.
They're carved out of rocks?
They did. So the story was that King Lalibela in the 12th century traveled to Jerusalem, which was a long way then.
Right,
I think 1,600 miles, something like that. And when he was there, though, was when the Muslims took over and Christianity was illegal. And so he traveled back into Lalibela, so back into Ethiopia, and decided that he was going to build his own Jerusalem.
Oh, wow.
And so he ordered them to build these. And really what they did is the stone that it's made of is a very soft stone, soft but firm, right? So it wasn't hard to cut, but they literally took pieces of rock and think about cutting all around it. And so there was like a square or a high rectangle piece of rock standing on its own now, free from all the rest of the mountain. And then they started carving the insides of it. So there's no beams, there's no pillars or anything. It's literally a building, a church.
Sounds amazing.
It is amazing. And what they believe, or King Lalibela said, was that angels came and helped him build that at night, or their workers said that.
Oh.
Because they said, allegedly, things would get done overnight, and they weren't sure why. And so what 60 Minutes was covering about was these buildings, these structures in Lalibela, are starting to crumble. And so it's like the place to be for Christmas in Ethiopia. I think they say that about 300,000 people make the trek there.
And are they all dressing in white?
All in white.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And still, even today, right, in modern time, it's still the religious mecca or journey for them to make. One last one. Of course, our favorite thing is about food. In the days before Ghana, you'll see people carrying live chickens on the streets or on minibuses. And sheep are everywhere, especially around condominiums and apartment buildings in the yards of people's homes. There are people pushing, pulling, drying, carrying sheep on their shoulders, getting them into trucks and the taxis. There's also a tradition where they get a sheep slaughtered in your backyard and it gets cooked right there.
Oh my goodness. That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's probably good. But on Ghana, the Ethiopians break the fast with a feast that includes dishes containing chicken, beef, and lamb.
Most probably people, slaughtered in the backyard.
People enjoy eating meat on Christmas to break the 45 days. The center priest, though, is a dish called Dorowat. Doro is a thick and spicy stew made with chicken and whole boiled eggs, simmered in a flavorful blend of spices. You could not believe, I saw a video of them making Dorowat and the amount of onions they put in first. Like, I love onions, but I was looking at it like, oh, this is crazy. But it looks very good. So think about a really thick stew. The wat is eaten on the plate of injera, and pieces of injera are used to as an edible spoon to scoop up the wat. Ethiopian wine is made from fermented honey without grapes, and that's also served. So grapes. They also drink tella. It's a homemade type of beer with a strong alcoholic drink called Erke, made with local plants and herbs. And of course, the Ethiopian coffee is also a part of the Christmas celebration, which Ethiopian coffee is super strong.
I'm just thinking of that Dorowat. So an egg, bunch of onions, and the spicy berber, whatever in there. Wow.
Yeah. Well, the injera is like a flatbread that they scoop it up with. Yeah.
Wow. So making me hungry.
Yeah, they even have music in Ethiopia.
This calls for some Christmas music.
Yes, this Christmas music.
What kind of Christmas music is that?
The least you could do is play some Christmas music.
And now back to Christmas music.
They have to. You dress in white and you go dance at the Rock, Jerusalem. Jerusalem rocks. New Jerusalem rocks.
I like that. That's it. They need you in marketing.
Yeah, I know.
Let's listen. This song was performed by a group called, it's a trio called Ahadu. The name Ahadu means number one, and they claim to be the first in leading the way in creating modern Ethiopian music for a global market.
Oh.
This is their version take of an Ethiopian tune called Asanabal Asana Gana, which is often referred to as the official Christmas anthem. It's a modern remix of an old school classic, providing both an Ethiopian feel as well as a hip hop vibe. The song describes the Christmas game, the field hockey game, like we were just talking about. Right. The lyrics of the song translate to, "We are so glad Christmas is here. We can all play the Christmas game. When we do, everyone is equal." The lords and the commoners. Even the lords do not scold for playing during Ghana, but will play along.
So you're going to be sitting at your Christmas dinner, Christmas day, and all of a sudden you hear this bang, bang, bang on your door, and you'll open them. There'll be the bakers with our field hockey sticks going, "Come on, we're playing the Christmas game.
It's trivia. It's trivia. Trivia."
Let's talk about trivia as we wrap up. Unfortunately, we in the United States often identify Ethiopia with famine and suffering, right? We remember the images we saw during the Band-Aid Crusade and perceive Ethiopia as a poor and starving country. What we don't appreciate is the rich history of the area. We know that Ethiopia is the birthplace of our entire species, Homo sapiens, and we know from radioactive dating that we originate from one valley in southern Ethiopia that is known as the cradle of mankind.
We know that? I didn't know that. That's wow. We all came from Ethiopia?
Everybody knows that, Bob. And everybody who knows and appreciates and can define the movie Crumbs knows this. Also, Ethiopia was one of the world's strongest empires in the 3rd century. At the time, it was Persia, Rome, China, and Ethiopia as the four great powers.
Which, again, heard of Persia. Obviously, we know Rome was. China, we knew was. I didn't know Ethiopia was a great world power.
No.
Wow.
And Ethiopia was also one of the first countries to convert to Christianity, even before the Roman Empire.
Take that. They know it's Christmas.
That's right. Right. Going back to the beginning here. So there's quite a bit of colorful trivia to pick from. We thought about the fact that Ethiopia is one of the only countries in Africa not to have been colonialized, nor to have a European or Arabic national language.
Wow.
So we considered asking about the Ethiopian runner who ran the 1960 Olympic marathon in Rome, barefoot, finished first, and set a new world record.
Wow. Those Ethiopians. Yeah. We know they're fast.
We could inquire about that happened in Ethiopia during 1990, where lions killed 35 hyenas, and hyenas managed to kill 6 lions, with the lions eventually taking over this territory. So
there was a lion-hyena war.
There was. Who knew? But finally, we thought to question about Kaldi, the 9th century Ethiopian who discovered coffee when he notices goats dancing after eating the beans from a coffee plant.
That's how they discovered coffee.
Instead, we wanted to know what is claimed to be located in Ethiopia and watched over by a monk known as the Guardian for his entire life, praying before it and offering incense. But don't tell Indiana Jones. So what's in Ethiopia? Protected by a monk called the Guardian.
The Guardian.
So if you know what it is and you want to share it with the world, send us your response to festivefans@gmail.com and we'll make sure your choice of honest to goodness 100% certified USDA organic festive foreign film sticker will be sent to you. Win a sticker. And also, hey, we are starting to plan for our second anniversary. So remember, if you're a regular listener or a new listener, we want to include you. We are looking for guests to tell their 5 favorite 4F shows of the past 2 years, or maybe their 5 favorite movies we covered, or even favorite customs or songs. If you spent a Christmas in a foreign country and share, and you want to share a story, email us at festivefans@gmail.com. Also, if you can watch the movie Crumbs and give us a recap in your own words.
I'd love to know that.
We will make you a prime part of the anniversary
show.
I'll
give you a sticker if you watch Crumbs.
Just tell us what you'd like to talk about, and you might be heard in 31 different countries, because that's who listens to us today. We're looking forward to including you. So before we say goodnight, Bob, Ben Franklin is going to give us a quote.
Ben Franklin?
Yeah.
Don't fly a kite in the rain?
You knew that one? A good conscience is one that has a continual Christmas in it.
Ben said that?
Ben said that.
Yeah, he was good with the quotes, you know.
He was just amazing.
A stitch in time.
Did he do that?
I think so. Oh, didn't he save 9?
I don't know.
Early to bed, early to rise. That's him, yeah.
All right, Bob. Thanks for having me. Thanks again for letting me review Crumbs. I look forward to it.
We put it behind us, Mark.
Have we,
though, We're moving on. I don't know if I'll ever put it behind me. I did put up a little altar, though, to Michael Jordan in my house.
You know, it's funny. I mean, why not? Greatest basketball play ever?
Yeah.
Okay.
The GOAT. I'm leaving. I'm heading for the rocket ship right now.
That's right. Good night, Bob.
Good night, Mark.
Bob, you know what I want to do for our second anniversary?
What's that?
Take the night off.
What do you mean?
We want to hear from our listeners. We'd love to have you on our show. Record a message or send a note and we'll read it out loud. Share a story with us. Did you ever spend Christmas in a foreign country? Is there a place you dream of visiting? What world customs do you still practice and are passing on to your kids?
Or is there a favorite 4F episode that you like? Or maybe a favorite intro bit? Have you watched one of our movies or added one of our foreign Christmas songs to your holiday song rotation?
We love top 5 lists. Tell us your top 5 Christmas baddies, top 5 countries we haven't covered, or your top favorite Christmas foods, because we love food on this show.
Did you like our live show? Should we do more? What should we do differently? Whatever you want to comment on, you send it to festivefans@gmail.com. We'll put it on our show, and you'll be super popular with all those festive foreign film watchers. You know, the ones who speak English and listen to podcasts about Christmas. Yeah, you'll just be popular with us.
Yay!
Send it in now. Our anniversary show is June 6th.
If we use your feedback on the show, we will announce your name on the show and send you a special sticker set that includes our sponsors. Send it to festivefans@gmail.com.
Actually, we're done.
It's over. It's over.
It's over. Kaput. Finito.
It's over. It's over. It's over.
This has been a Waysound Studio production.
Sound engineering on our show is by Jake Fontana.